Welcome back, my nerds, geeks, blurts, and freaks, to another episode of Geeky, Sexual, and Intellectual. I'm your host, Q, and today's guest is Mr. Saxton Moore. If you don't know who that is, I don't know what's wrong with you. You need to go to his Instagram right now. So as the banner states, he is an Emmy-nominated animation director. The first time I ever noticed his work before I knew who he was, I was watching Nick Jr. with my daughter, and it was Black History Month, and there were animations during the commercials talking about Black civil rights activists and Black leaders and creators on the commercial breaks, just talking about them as children and how they grew into the great pioneers that they were. And that always stuck with me. And when I found out it was Saxton, my mind was blown. It's annoying. And then it'll be years down the line you found out and it just blow your mind all over again. So I just want to let you guys know, if you are a up-and-coming artist, Black creator, this is the episode for you. This is a note-taking episode. So please get your pen and paper, because Saxton got all the knowledge. We also talk about the industry. I know that's a hot topic right now, but this is coming from the people that know what the industry need, and the industry keeps trying to, I don't know how to say it, carbon copy what they don't know, or create what they don't know the stories of. I don't know. But he talks about how we need to get in those rooms and how corporations can involve us in that storytelling. So get ready, y'all. Here we go. Me and Saxton get into it. Drop it. All right. Welcome back to another episode of Geeky, Sexual, and Intellectual. I am your host, Q, and today's guest is Mr. Saxton Moore. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Great. I'm glad to come aboard and do this thing.
Oh, yeah, because we've been, I kind of like to say it, insta-homies for, I guess, about a year now, and I don't even know how that started, but I'm glad it did.
Yeah, likewise. I've been following you for quite some time.
Yeah. So when I'm always like, why is this man following me? Because I go to your page and I'm like, look at this important shit he's doing. And I'm just over here playing. Okay. So what I'm going to do is, for the people that don't know you, which I don't even know why I know these people and why they listen to me, because I've reshared a lot of your work on my Instagram. But Saxton Moore is a professional award-winning animation director / creative visionary. Saxton has almost 20 years of experience producing animated content for the biggest entertainment companies in the United States. He started out as one of the leading visionaries that helped brand and launch Cartoon Network. So when I found that out about you, that was my dream job in college when I lived in Atlanta, Georgia. I was like, I want to work for Cartoon Network. None of us in my art department worked for Cartoon Network.
Right.
So basically what I want to get into is how this journey for Little Saxton started. So tell me about your childhood and any influences that created the artist that you are today.
Well, as a kid, you know, I used to love cartoons, comic books, Garbage Pail Kids, all that weird, you know, because like a lot of my, a lot of the kids I grew up with, you know, that was during the era where like drugs was heavy and all the other stuff. And I was the kid that drew. Mm-hmm. And so drawing kept me out of trouble. So I would watch cartoons, read comics. You know, I was a collector and all that other stuff. So I tried to stay away from the street life and focused on, you know, my craft as an artist. Because I was like, man, I wanted to be a comic book artist. And then I found out, you know, I would send letters to the, you know, Image Comics, Marvel's Comics, right? And it's a boys club. Like, yeah. wasn't really no Black people there. And I would get rejection letter after rejection letter. And this was like me in high school. And I would airbrush on pants and shirts and stuff like that. Like, that was my hustle. You know what I'm saying? While Cass was out there selling drugs and all this other stuff, getting in trouble. Yeah. I would like airbrush cartoon characters with people's names and stuff, and have a backpack full of clothes, and I would just hustle that in school, you know. And then, I grew up in Atlanta as well, out in Marietta, Cobb County.
Okay, I lived there once.
Yeah, and so, you know, after I did that, you know, my art teachers nurtured me and so on and so forth, and they urged me to go to art school. which I went to the Art Institute of Atlanta, right? And then,
Okay.
just like I said before, to go back to the cartoon, that after school, I went straight home, caught the cartoons after school, like Thundercats, G.I. Joe, all that stuff like that. This is before Cartoon Network. And then, Saturday morning cartoons, because back then cartoons were rare. Like you didn't have 24-hour cartoons, so you had to catch them when you could. And like once I found out that people got paid to make these, because as a kid you watch them, but you don't know people make them and get paid to do it. I was like, what, paid to make cartoons? That's what I'm doing. That's what I'm doing. And so what I did, I started doing, I was like, there was no such thing as an animation school from my knowledge. So I would like take a VHS tape and I would record Looney Tunes on VHS. And we had a VHS player where you can single frame, you can pause the picture and frame by frame. And I would sit there with my sketchbook. I made my own, this is my own study. And I would sit there and I'd draw each frame and write numbers of how long it was on the screen and all this other stuff. Like I used to be obsessed like that. And then when I kind of dropped out of art school because it was the first year they offered animation, right, as a career. And I ended up like they were trying to teach me how to do animation with like AutoCAD or something like that, which was like because the animation software hadn't really came out yet. And so I was like, man, this is not how Walt Disney said that it goes down. So I was like looking at different books, going to the library. And so I did my projects on paper the way we used to do it. And I would hang out in the computer lab and we would like, we figured out a process where you could scan your artwork and then sequence it. And so I turned my project in like that. And the teacher was like, I was the only person that did that way. So I thought I was in trouble, but everybody's mind was blown. I was like, oh, how'd you do that? How did you know? And then I was like, the teacher said, good job, good job. All right, everybody, class dismissed. And Saxon State, stay back. And I thought I was in trouble, right? And he's like, yeah, well, so tell me how you did this. And I was like, okay, well, I did this and this. And then I was nervous. I still thought I was in trouble. He's like, okay, thanks. He was taking notes. And I was like, so did I get a good grade? Or, he's like, oh, yeah. You aced it. You aced it. Good job. And I walked out excited. And then I got halfway down the hall. And I was like, wait a second. Is this dude taking notes?
Exactly.
My teacher taking notes and I'm paying this dude. What I'm saying? And there was a couple of other situations that happened in the school that I was like, I had an opportunity to take an internship, a paid internship, right? They wanted to give my internship to an upperclassman, right? I was like, no way. I said, I dropped out. I took that paid internship because I was going to get paid to draw. And then years later, they used my animation to promote the school.
Oh no. That's what I'm saying. You rewrote the lesson plan for dude. He didn't have, oh, I didn't even think about that. Like you, the instructor, how could you not think about the easiest process for your students?
I'm paying you and you taking notes from me. I was like, I'm out. And a couple years, I think a couple years after that, well, my first internship, I went to visit my father in San Francisco, right? And I got my first internship at Wild Brain Studios, which was they were the hottest anime. They were doing all the dope stuff in animation at the time. The dude that created Aeon Flux was there, Peter Chung. It was like a whole bunch of great animation directors. They was all there. And so I got an internship there for about a year. And then I got a call back to Atlanta where this one commercial company was offering me a full-time job. So I was like, I'm gonna fly back to Atlanta. And it was a sweet job because we literally did animated commercials maybe once every other month. So outside of that, I was kicking it. I was just drawing whatever I wanted to draw and getting paid. A commercial came around. And then a couple of the guys that was working with me there left. I didn't know where they went or whatever. And so they started taking me to lunch. Said, hey, man, you should come over to this studio. It's called Primal Screen, right? And they were in Atlanta. And he was like, yeah, man, we're doing stuff. There's going to be a 24-hour cartoon channel. I was like, man, ain't nobody watching cartoons 24 hours a day. Exactly.
You did
Like
not know.
I had a sweet job where I literally didn't have to work until like every other month, and then a commercial would come in, and we animate stuff for like Ford commercials and stuff like that. And then I was like, man, I'm not leaving a full-time job. Like, I can leave no 2-hour lunches and stuff like that. I'm not leaving. And then all of a sudden, it was like, just come by the studio, Sax. Just come by the studio. I went to the studio. Man, on the wall they had storyboards of Speed Racer, Looney Tunes, Fred Flintstone, Johnny Quest, and I was like, wait a second, y'all get to work on these shows? It's like, yeah, we're branding the network, right? There's a 24-hour network that's going to come out, and we're doing all the commercials surrounding all the shows. So we get to animate Bugs Bunny. We get to animate Looney Tunes and Animaniacs and stuff like that that was going to be on the network. I was like, all right, I'm in. But I was like, and this is how I was a director early, because, and I negotiated. Because I was young. Every director there came from like Disney or some other place down to Atlanta to help brand this network at the studio. And they each had two or three assistants, right? And I told them, I was like, look, if you want me to leave my current job to come work with you guys, this is great and everything, but I need some assurances. I need to guarantee my employment for at least 2 years. You know what I'm saying? And I have to be a director. I'm not going to come in here. Like, I'm already animating stuff. I'm already a director over here. And they were like, okay, fine. But it was like a 1-year thing, 1-year trial. I come in full time as a director. But the messed up thing was, is they were hungry for, Atlanta wasn't a place for animation, right? And so they were recruiting kids from art school and stuff like that, and training them up. But I had already been doing animation. So when I got in there, I didn't have any assistants. And so we were knocking out those little five, they're called powerhouse bumpers, 5 and 10 second interstitials between the shows. And they had to look just like the show. So that was my boot camp into like animation in different styles, different timing. And I learned, it was my boot camp, and we were animating on paper. And I had to deliver all my stuff the same time that these other directors were doing, and they had three people helping them. So I would come in first thing in the morning. I wouldn't leave till like 11 o'clock at night, have to drive 30 minutes away down to Cobb County, go to sleep, wake right back up, and get back to work. You know what I'm saying? I was exhausted, but it was fun. I was making cartoons. And I did that for about 3 years, and I directed over like 70 commercials, like 70 bumpers, right? They were the ones that had the check wipes between and said, we'll be back after these messages. And then we moved into like 30-second spots, which were longer. And I worked on like there's a classic commercial where it was live action and animation with the cartoon characters finding a parking lot, trying to find a parking space. And so that was my foray into long form. So that's how I got in to doing working at doing stuff for Cartoon Network. And a lot of those guys now that I came up with in the beginning are now at other big studios like Floyd County, Bento Box. All this stuff that's popping off in Atlanta right now with like Archer and all those shows. A lot of the guys are the people that I started with in the industry. But needless to say, I didn't see too many black faces. And I had the opportunity as a director to bring in, some young brothers that I discovered that were super talented. And I trained them up and they became my assistants. And a lot of them still work in the industry today.
Well, you know what? You spoke on schools. You said you went to the Art Institute of Atlanta, and I was going to ask you that. I went to the Atlanta College of Art. So, did you ever work with anybody from there?
No, I had a couple of friends that went there. Oh, actually, my good friend Andre Moore went to the Art Institute of Atlanta. I mean,
No, I don't.
he went to Atlanta College of Art.
Yeah, no. And sadly, that school got like a hostile takeover by Savannah. I was like, I don't even know who get my credits at. Who do I call to get my credits? But yeah, that is fascinating. And it's just crazy how, we never knew each other in life, but just to have you did the thing and I just had the aspiration. I was like, this is amazing. You were behind the scenes already, doing it. And I'm like, I just want to be in there. I would walk past where the big Cartoon Network sign was. I was like, I just want to be in there. I take a tour. Y'all don't gotta hire me. I just want to be in there.
They did give tours though, even if you were just like some random person that wanted to be an artist, if you can find somebody there, they'd be more than happy to give you tours. That's how they did a lot of people, you know?
Yeah, and I don't know what stopped me from doing it. I don't know. Maybe I was another feeling of being overwhelmed, and I was like, I hate to be that close to the dream and can't have it, so I'm just gonna stay on the outside, which is
Yeah,
really sad. It sounds pathetic, but
I
yeah.
think what would have been different if you saw somebody that looked like you that worked there.
Exactly,
It'd be a
exactly.
whole lot of difference, you know.
Oh, man. Okay, so when did you realize that you had a talent for creating people, places, and things that others could not?
Like I said in high school, right? I was the guy that could draw, you know, and I drew all through elementary school, middle school. And then by the time I got to high school, all my peers knew me for being able to draw well, right? And I was originally inspired by the Muppets. That's what got me started. And
Oh,
so,
word.
when I was real little in elementary school, in kindergarten, when they had like those Disney coloring books, like for some reason there was some tracing paper laying around, I remember. And as everybody was like scribbling and coloring with their crayons on the inside, I took the tracing paper and I was like, what's this? What kind of paper is this? I could see through it. And I started tracing the drawings in the coloring book and making it look just like the Disney drawings. And everybody was like, oh man, how'd you do that? You know? And then once people were excited about what I could do, I was like watching them. I was like, let me try to draw, you know, some of these Muppet characters, even though they weren't illustrations, they were like character, you know, puppets. And then I would try to learn how to shade, right? Like in kindergarten. And so once I started getting that, it was all about people being amazed of my ability at a young age. And I kept that up because I like, you know, people giving me credit for the work that I was doing. And so that
Exactly.
carried all the way through high school when I was airbrushing and whatnot. And so, you know, by the time I was on that wave, right, throughout my childhood, all through high school, and then I was like, wait a second, now I'm about to graduate. I need to figure out what I'm going to do in my life. I was
Exactly.
like, I don't know how to do nothing but draw now. You know,
Man.
and people are like, you're going to find some way to get a job getting paid drawing, or you're going to join the military,
Ooh,
right?
yeah,
I
that's
was like, I
drastic.
don't know what else. I don't want a 9-to-5 job because I've been doing that forever, and I didn't like people telling me what to do and when to do it all the time. And I was like, man, I gotta find some kind of way to get paid to draw. Like, what's that going to be?
Yeah. Man, it's funny that you say that, not because this interview not about me, but when you said something that hit a nerve that when I realized I could do something that other people couldn't, because I've been drawing since I was five. And so I had to go to private school. And then I had art class, and my teacher was, she saw me drawing something. She was like, huh, hold on, stop what you're doing. And she went and got a book. And it was like it was basically an art history book. And there was a drawing of a black man that was in stipple. So she was like, can you draw this? I was like, I don't know, let me try. So I drew it identically. And I think I was in seventh grade. And she was like, oh my God. Like, so she started calling other teachers in. And I could just feel like this, I don't know, this rush of like greatness inside of me. Like, oh my God, the adults think I'm great. So she was like, oh my God, okay, when you finish, you let me know. And she like ran down to the office and like laminated it. And she hung it in the art classroom. And I was like, can't everybody do this? So I started looking at everybody else's paper. I don't know why that never entered my mind to look at everybody else's artwork. And I was like, that's some bullshit.
That's usually how it works. When somebody takes notice, you felt seen, right? You felt appreciated, and you feel unique and different, and set you apart from everybody else. And you want to keep that momentum going, right? And then in order to do that, you have to like get even better at it. And then, God forbid, somebody that can also do it as good or better than you shows up, then you gotta protect your territory. You got to protect your territory. He's like, hold up. Yeah, they can draw way better than me. You know what? I need to go back to the drawing board, stay up late, and start drawing until I can do as good or better than that person. Because, you know, nothing's wrong with healthy competition.
Yeah, because I see, not to, it's not down talking anybody, but I see a lot of artists they are stagnant because they're not around, and like you said, anybody that'll challenge them. So I even see some Instagrams. I'm like, either you haven't been doing this long or you're not practicing. And you got to have a sense of being humble, because I wasn't humble until I got to high school. I went to a performing and visual arts high school. So all my life, I was better than everybody until I got to the ninth grade. And you had to audition to get into this school. So during the audition, I'm like, I can't do that. What is she doing? I've never seen that style before. So I was like, and I got panicky, like, I'm not going to make it into this school. I can't do what she's doing. And I made it in. And then that began the process of me learning different types of art styles and the way that you like stippling. I didn't know it was called stippling when my teacher asked me to do it in seventh grade. I didn't know what charcoal was, just all this crazy stuff. So it just expanded my mind. And then I got better at something I saw somebody else do. So I felt like I was levels behind them, but I'm like, I'm gonna catch up with that ass. I gotta learn how to do it because I've been great all my life. And then you come in here and make me feel a certain way about myself. I can't have it. So
you know what's funny about the whole school thing? It was like that wave that I was riding all through childhood and high school. I tried that shit when I get into the Art Institute. My first day and my first project I did, I was like, you know, everybody's about to draw, all the artists are there. It's an art school, so everybody's an artist. I was like, you know what? We about to see who good up in this bitch, right? And so my first project, like, we were supposed to draw a building at Lenox Mall, was right across the street. We had to draw, we had to draw what we saw out the window, and I drew the hell out of that building, right? And then I was waiting to see everybody else's. So I was like, yeah, I got this. And then when the grades came in, I got a C.
What?
Like, mine was literally top notch, but I got a C. And then I asked the teacher, like, well, didn't I do a good job? Like, I strive to be this. It's like, yeah, we grade on a scale. Like, we see you're super talented, but we want to see you do greater. And I was like, do all my teachers grade like this? And I immediately took all my classes and I dumbed down all my work projects just so that I could. That's just the way I think.
You curve the curve,
I was working three jobs to pay to go to school. You know what I'm saying? I was like, I need to ace everything. And if you graded me on a certain scale, I need to, like, you know, hone it down.
Yeah.
You know, just so I can get some good grades. So.
See, and that was the duck seed. You keep tapping on stuff. You said when you drew Lenox Mall, we did the same thing. And I drew that fountain in the front, the triangle. So my teacher, I got a low grade on that. I said, what was wrong with it? She said, Quincy, your perspectives are off. And I was like, what the hell is a perspective? So she was like, angles, the way everything has to line up in a perspective. I say, oh shit. And I got taken back again. I'm like, this humbling shit ain't cool. But hey, I learned something I didn't know. Cause I don't think in the high school they taught us about perspectives. We may have drew the hallway or some shit like that, but that was one dimension at a mentioning point. And she was like, no, you got to see the perspective of the angle of the building and wait, how the fountain lines up with that. I was like, you're speaking a foreign language to me. This is all new. So the whole class had to learn about perspectives at that point. Man, oh, shit, you almost made me cry because that was my thing. I'm like, don't tell me I don't know how to do this thing. I've been doing it since I was five. She's like, nope, I'm here to tell you, you don't got this shit. All right, so let's see. Were you one of those artist types in middle school and high school that would draw for your classmates and charge in next to nothing or little to nothing for projects? I know you said that was your hustle, but now when you look back at it, would you like, oh, I should have been charging their asses way more?
Well, no, I charged top dollar. I was flipping.
Oh, wow.
It got to the point where, because, you know, during that time for me, everybody, like, that was the thing. It was hip hop. Belleville DeVoe was out, all that stuff, you know, and everybody was wearing that in the music videos. So I was like charging top dollar because I was like really, really dope artist at the time. And then I was like, when Rhinestones and all that stuff came out, I started putting it on the baseball caps, and then I would buy the baseball caps to match the outfits. You know what I'm saying? Like, I would have hats with the rhinestones and the sports letters.
Yeah.
And then I had the a jersey or a shirt to match it. And I was like charging top. Like, it was in my backpack was swole. You know what I'm saying? I come in and it was like I was selling drugs or some shit between class. Like, hey, me in the bathroom. What you got, man? And dudes would, kids would save up to, meet with me, and it'd be like Thursdays and Fridays. It's on. Meet me in the bathroom. I got you.
See, I love that because that's a sense of confidence and that you knew your worth. And I didn't have that sense of worth because I did this. I sold just drawings. Like somebody wanted a self-portrait or something like that. And I was not charging shit, Saxton. And so when I look back, I was like, that was something nobody could do. But that's a problem with a lot of artists, like young, they've been doing it, whatever. They just don't know their value and what they should be charging because people always try to nickel and dime you for art. Like, you don't understand the process and the time that it takes to get this to the level that you're gonna be in love with it. I don't feel right selling it to you if I'm not in love with it. So when you say, you said 400, but you think you can do it for 100? No, it's 400.
You know what? For just a tip for a lot of artists, you have to, even when I learned this when I was doing airbrushing back then, is you have to charge not just for your talent and your time, but for materials.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? And like there's two ways you can charge. One is a flat rate and one is an hourly rate. You know what I'm saying? And then if you charge a flat rate and the client comes back and wants changes or adjustments, you charge an hourly rate on top of that flat rate. You know what I'm saying? And that's the best way to kind of like gauge what you want to do. And then even on a professional level, people still trying to, these young artists, there's like some dope artists I see online, and then professional companies will come at them, right? Because they're young and they don't know the business, and they will get them for dirt cheap, and they're excited to do it because they're like a major company. You know what I'm saying? But you're already dope. Matter of fact, there was one artist, I'm not going to say who it was, but they had thousands. No. I think they had like 2 mil followers on social media. And the studio that was eyeing them, right, had less than them. Then they gave them a development deal for a show. They came in, and I don't fall for the okie doke because I've been through it before. You know what I'm saying? So they gave that person a development deal to work on their content that they created for a year. So they stopped, they weren't posting as frequently. They just stepped aside for this opportunity. And then, of course, that network was like, you know what? We're going to pass on that. We're going to pass on that. And they were distraught. They were distraught over it. Like, oh man, oh. They were almost wanting to give, like, they had their own property that they were developing in there. And they had more followers than the network did. And they were like, heartbroken. I was like, dude, you got more followers than, why are you talking about, like, I think they were going to put it to the side for a while and reevaluate themselves. But at the same time, you know what that network did? The network was like, we're going to pass on it, but we have these terrific projects that we would love you to be a part of. You see what I'm saying? And I was like, dude, you had way more followers than they did, right? You had way more eyeballs than they did. And now you're second guessing whether you're going to do your thing because they said no, right?
That's crazy as hell.
Since we have access to YouTube, all the social media, if you can garner enough eyeballs, why do you even need that network to fulfill your dreams, right? You got the talent, you buckle down and do it. And if it's worth anything, they'll come knocking, right? It's better to pitch something that's done, that you put some sweat equity into, than to go to them with a handout, right? Because now you're making a sale.
And see, I feel like that transcends all media platforms, like music. I have a friend that's in music, and he's been in rooms with some heavy hitters in the industry, but they want to nickel and dime him and give him these crazy contracts. I'm like, dude, if you want to just take that money, it's like basically the worst loan in the world when you sign these contracts. Like, hey, we're going to give you $50,000, but you can't have any creative control over it, and we're going to put it out with no help from you, from none of your input. And if it sells, great. But if it doesn't, you still owe us this $50,000. Like, no, that is a gang. That's a mob move, sir. Don't take that
But
deal.
I don't want to discourage people from taking that route because even if you get nickel and dime in the beginning, if you don't understand the business that you're getting into, you can take it as a lesson. learn from that experience so that you're inside that industry and then be a sponge and learn how everything works within that industry, get better as an artist, and then once you obtain that knowledge, then you flip it. I mean, that's what Jay-Z does. He did that
Exactly.
his whole career. He surrounded himself by people that were greater than him. He learned from it, absorbed that knowledge, and then went on and became greater.
Yeah. And that you said not to knock that path to what you're trying to get to, but don't be so hungry you can't be smart. Because you were saying with social media and just the internet in general, if you don't like what they're trying to give you for your content, just keep doing what you've been doing. Somebody else will come knocking at the door, and you still getting all those views and reach or whatever you're trying to obtain through what you were already doing. You don't need this, quote unquote, big company to come and save you. Like, no, they need you. That's why they knocked on your door.
They need content right now. They need content more than ever because everybody's stuck at home. They got nothing to do but absorb that content. At the same time, we as creative people with all these platforms at our disposal, as a community of creative people, we should be able to help each other. It's like, hey, there's some projects coming up. Like I follow shout out to like Black and Animated. Like they got their podcast and they're doing all their things, but they have industry events where they bring like Black artists within other studios together, and we get to connect and touch base with each other and find out, who's hiring where, what project is coming up. You got to do the same thing on social media as well. If you're other artists and we follow each other, it's like if you know more about the business and rates, contracts, all that other stuff, and you need help, reach out to that other individual. And find out, it's like, hey, I got this opportunity with this company, but I don't know what to charge, or I don't know about the contracts. And then we have to help each other out in that aspect.
And I want to speak to that too, because I've been trying to dabble back into that because I'm trying to look for other streams of income with the climate we're living in. But what I found, particularly on Instagram, I would reach out to artists to ask them just like simple questions, either no comment or, hey, I have a Patreon. I'm like, I know you're trying to do your hustle, but God damn, you can't answer this simple question. And one in particular, there's an artist, he goes by Art Attacks on Instagram. His name is Sean. And I was like, he was my last resource. I was like, I'm gonna write this brother. If he don't write me back, okay, I'm done trying to get help. And I asked him how to use a tool in Procreate. That's all I need to know. How do I set this tool to do what I needed to do? And he was like, you know what? I'm at work right now, but when I go to lunch, I'm gonna send you a video. I was like, God damn, I just wanted to type a couple of words. And he sent me three videos on how to use this tool and then what it can do. I was like, brother, thank you. I've been asking people for 3 months to help me. Just and I was like, now it's nothing. It's cake. Just to use just the it's a it was a I can't even remember the name of the tool setting. But anyway, I was like, that's all I needed. We don't want to help each other because we feel like somebody's our competition. If you're doing you, I can't ruin what you're already doing. So why not help and lend a helping hand to your fellow artists?
Especially as people of color as well, too, because like right now the industry is looking that, well, they appear to be looking for Black content. They appear to be like trying to bring in, Black talent and stuff like that. But I'm still skeptical because right now I've heard from a few people that, yeah, this company came to me and they were like offering me all these opportunities, and then it got quiet. It looks good for those places to bring in people and interview people of color, but if they don't act on it, then what's the point? They're aware of you, but there have been, and I won't point out studios' names, but there are companies that will download people's images, put them on the wall, right? They have meetings looking at other styles and stuff like that. They'll have meetings that look, they won't even contact that artist, but they'll use it as a point of reference so they can mimic that style and whatnot,
Oh
And
my
so
God.
you got to be careful. We got to look out for each other. We got to help each other. We got to educate each other.
Yeah, and see, it's crazy. You in my mind, because that was one of my questions. Because I was going to ask you, would you say in our current inclusiveness climate. I'm like, because it's elusive, like you were saying. A lot of major content production companies are scrambling to find and grab up Black content creators and their stories. How would, if you had a plan of action for inclusiveness throughout these companies, how would you implicate that or apply that to these companies? Like, what would be their step one
Well,
on how to do that?
if I were to implement it within those companies, I would, it's all about hiring a person of color as a decision maker. It's not enough just to have a person of color in the room. That room, if you're pitching to someplace or you're reviewing artwork, right? Especially if you're looking for a talent that's African American, Latino, what have you. If you're looking at that work, you need somebody that can relate to that work and that person's experience as well. That pitch room should look like the United Nations. You know what I'm saying? And like those people in that room should be able to make a decision collectively, not just one person. You know what I'm saying? And so, because you need to understand the material of the people that you're bringing in, right? And so. Yeah, that's my answer. That's why I would do that. But at the same time, I have respect for those networks, but those are those that that's their business. They're at the bottom line is that they're a business. And as a creator and a storyteller, you should look to those businesses as distribution, not as like, hey, I have this great idea, give me some money if you believe. Like I told my friend yesterday, it's like, as a company, they have a backlog of content that they've already acquired or got development deals on. And that if they acquire it or they put money toward it as a development deal, they've invested finance into it, right? And they have hundreds of those. Then on top of that, they have like a team of artists that they've recruited internally that are supposed to develop and create things within that company. So now two layers of content that they have inside that's all investment. But then you got this, you got these hot up and coming artists that don't work there, have amazing work, unique styles and whatnot, and then they're pitching, right? So now you have foreign content coming in. It may be amazing, but you've already invested in all this other stuff and all these other people. So that tells you how your chances are. And so like I don't want to discourage people from pitching and things like that, but you're pitching ideas, right? If you really want something to happen, you should look at them as a distributor, right? And if you have the means to animate something, animate it like a filmmaker, they'll go out and they'll get family and friends to raise money. They'll go on Kickstarter and they will make that film. Even if it's a short proof of concept for that film, they'll make that film, right? So you have to have that same mentality. Animation is a long process and a long game. If you have that talent, that skill to do so, do it, right? If you don't, you're just a creator and a storyteller. Paint portraits on canvases. You know what I'm saying? Like tell a story through that. Or do a children's book, graphic novel, novel, get your story out by any means, and then submit that. Because at that point, your storytelling is done. Right now, matter of like if they believe in it, then they can invest in something that's fully developed, and do it that route.
And what I always found funny, because I'm on the outside looking in, but it's basically to me with these big production companies is that you're leaving money on the floor when you don't invite, like you said, those other faces in the room. And it's not just always about Black faces. I'm like, when the last time did you see an accurate account of a Native American story or Asian American story or anything? And sometimes I watch this stuff and I was like, I know that person of that race was not in that room when they wrote that, because that was borderline racist. And they just fed that to the children.
That's an important fact too. We have to tell our stories, right? Like that's why Black Panther was done so well, because it had Black writer, Black director, the whole team. They hired Black camera crew, because we should be able to tell our stories. If you want effective results and you want authenticity, right, then you have to allow us to tell our stories, right? It's going to be genuine. That's why. And when we as people of color, we see that on the screen, then you know how we are when we go to the movies, we'll see a black film and then we'll claim it as ours. That's our movie.
Yeah.
You know, that's our movie. You know what I'm saying? That's our show. Black Panther, that's ours, right?
Yeah.
But if there's some falsity to it and it doesn't really represent us, we'll spot that out. We'll do our
Exactly.
research. Man, it's black, but there's something about it. I don't know, something just, and then we'll investigate, but oh, yeah, that's why. You know, I am feeling that now. That's not ours. You know
Yeah.
what I'm saying? So if you want authentic storytelling and you want the people that you're marketing it to really appreciate it and champion it and support it, then you have to let us tell those stories. And I
Exactly.
don't like saying let us. You have to, invest in those storytellers.
Yeah. And that's why I'm proud of a lot of creators, POC creators. They like, you know what? I'm not waiting on nobody to let me tell my
Right.
story. I'm going to publish my own graphic novel. I'm going to start a Kickstarter for my own cartoon. I'm going
Right.
to illustrate my own children's book because people are going to buy it. With the power of the internet, if you put a Kickstarter up, oh, I'll buy that shit. I don't have to
Right.
wait on you to get into Target and then buy this children's book for my daughter. You got a Kickstarter, it's mine when your shit is over and you
Right.
made, your budget. So I'm proud of us for that because, I don't really know you like that, Saxton, but I'm gonna be me. Fuck them companies.
Yeah. I mean, but you still. They got there the same way that we're trying to get there. You know what I'm saying? If we can own our own content, we have to come together as a community and support each other, right? So if
Yeah.
you see a bomb artist and they got a book coming out, they're trying to raise money for that book. They're trying to raise money for that animation, support them. And then in doing so, I mean, that's the beauty of Kickstarter. I've done a few Kickstarters. The beauty of Kickstarters is over the time since it started, a community within Kickstarter has grown, right? And so all the people that have done a Kickstarter campaign that has successfully raised their money, they still frequent that website, right? And then they pay it forward. A lot of those people pay it forward by like, okay, well, people donated to my campaign, I'm going to pay it forward and donate to other campaigns that I believe in. And they create community. And over years, that community grows and grows and grows. So now it's a whole lot easier if you have a great project and a lot of people that will believe and support into it, then you'll be able to raise that money. And that's what we have to do as a creative community is if you love an artist, support them. They got a t-shirt coming out, hit that up, get that t-shirt, rock that t-shirt. They got a book coming out, do that. And then build a community of like-minded people. If we all do that together, then we could, come together, build our own organizations, and then it would be self-sufficient. But in the meantime, we do have to lean towards those companies to distribute the content, right? Until something else comes up, until we build our own. You can still pitch, right? You can still create content and sell it to them.
Yeah.
Because that's wide exposure. But on the other hand, if you got way more viewers on your social media than they do, then you may not need them. You know what I'm
Yeah.
saying? But and it's not all about chasing the dollar either. You know what I'm saying? If you're consistent with your work and you build a library of your work, then people will come and support, right?
Yeah. Like Patreon. People have their whole shows on Patreon. They own that. You put it
Yeah.
on YouTube, you don't really own it. You start sharing your content with YouTube and Instagram, and it's not yours. But Patreon, you have subscribers that pay to come and look at your consistent content. You got a show. You airing your show. People are viewing your content. So don't be mad if Netflix don't want to pick it up because you still get your monthly money. Yeah.
Like I had a successful YouTube channel for a while. I just started a new one, but you make some decent money off ad dollars. The way, I don't know how it works now, but I know for a while the way it works is for every 1 million views, right? I think it was for every 1 million views, it's $1,000.
Oh, okay.
But that's like, you don't have to just say, like, if you have 10 videos and each one of them has a million views collectively, right? During that period, that's $10,000. There's some cats on there that frequent a million views per video, right? And if you think about it, it's not just that one time. Once you have a library of content, People that'll come there for the first time to see that one video will go back and watch all the other
Yeah,
videos,
because I do
and
that.
the views accumulate, and you're making ad dollars on there. Some of these YouTubers, like these a major studio, will reach out to a YouTuber and say, "Hey, come over here, and we want to shoot something on our platform." And like, I'm making $10,000 a month. Unless you give me $10,000 a month for this deal, you asking me to leave this audience to come work with you. Stop doing this, where I'm making some money, and come work with you. At this point now, as a creative person, you can be self-sufficient to a certain extent.
Yeah, because their names can't carry them anymore. They're a brand name, but I don't care about your brand name. Like you said, if your brand name can't match or beat what I'm already making by myself, you need to take the back seat, sir.
I mean, but you got to work hard. You got to work hard. You got to master your craft. You have to do it every day. You know what I'm saying? You have to believe in yourself, and other people will believe in you as well and support you.
Exactly. And speaking of that, me, you and I talked off camera, but something you threw my name in the hat and I got a piece of the pie, and I'm so appreciative of that, because I was like, am I ready for this? You've always wanted this all your life. And I was telling my husband, I was geeked. I was like, I've been wanting to be an artist all my life and it's happening. You know, I dabble and do a little something for somebody there, and I really don't, in my realm, I don't consider that really being an artist. I'm like, I'm just doing this little logo for somebody. I mean, I'm not being swamped by logos. That would fall into my realm of being an artist. But then when that came into my life, I was like, it's happening, Jesus. I'm re make me ready, Lord.
When you get the, I was happy to pass that, work over your way. You just gotta pay it forward. You gotta do that with other artists as well. If you're booked and you have another opportunity coming your way, pass it on to somebody else you believe in, give them an opportunity. But at the same time, like it's a lot of work. And once you get those opportunities, you gotta rise to the occasion and go above and beyond on that thing. You know what I'm saying? Like when you mentioned logos and stuff like that, like I never considered myself a designer, like a character designer and stuff in the realm of animation, yes. But like fonts, lettering, and logos and stuff like that in the past hadn't been my wheelhouse, but I was given an opportunity to design a logo. And once I did, right, it started spinning out of control and more logo. Like I did the Hilda logo on Netflix. I did Chico Bon Bon logo, which is a new show on Netflix as well. And then, I've just got a knack for doing logos now. And so I had to, once I got those opportunities, I was like, oh man, I don't want to end up with egg on my face. So let me research typeface, fonts, all that other stuff. And so I had to be a sponge and learn, because if it's going out in the public, if you're doing work and it's going to go out to the masses, right, your name is going to be attached to it. Your name's got to mean something. You know what I'm saying? And so you don't say, well, who did, like if it's trash, like who did that? Your name is gonna be on there. And
Exactly.
so if they look at it and it's dope, they're gonna remember that. They're gonna remember who did that and that they did it well. Nothing compares to a job well done.
And if it's trash, they're gonna remember that.
Yeah,
Like, I'm
exactly.
not gonna throw no dough they way. That was garbage. But like some of the titles you were talking about that you worked on, that a lot of people, like for instance, I didn't know till I started looking into your background. I was like, Sasha did that? So like the Black History illustrations do it, like the commercial spots on Nickelodeon. Like they would talk about Sacagawea and all it, the different black leaders. I was like, oh my God, me and my baby used to, when she was a baby, watch Nickelodeon, and we saw those commercial ads for Black History Month. And I was like, you are in people's lives and they don't even know it. They've seen your work. Did we have a freeze? I think we had a freeze. Are you still there?
Hey, sorry.
Okay, there you go. It's good.
So you were saying the Black History something?
Yeah, so the Black History animation that was during commercial spots on Nickelodeon. So they would talk about Barack Obama and Sacagawea and da 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 da. And I was like, I know that. Me and my baby used to watch that when she was hard on Nickelodeon. I was like, and that was before I even knew you. So I was like, people have been touched by your artwork and they don't even know it. So some of the titles, like if I can run it down, you've done work for the Care Bears, like you said, Chico Bon Bon, the children's book Hair Love, what is it, Sugar and Toys.
I didn't work on Hair Love. I did a fan art for that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but they did bring that to me when they were doing Kickstarter. I was supposed to do, be a director on that, but things didn't work out. And but I'm a big fan of Hair Love.
Oh yeah, it's beautiful. You worked on and like you did, correct me if I'm wrong, you worked on Rugrats. You worked on
No,
Rugrats? You didn't work on Rugrats?
no,
Who the hell is writing your credits
no.
on
Is it IMDb?
the internet?
Oh yeah, there's some things on there. I was like, it was like this old stuff, like Rugrats. You know what's funny though? So I got two close friends that I work with in the animation industry, and I think they make, because like I said, like there's not a lot of black people in the animation industry, and if you go back to like old school stuff, maybe they think we all look alike. We all say first. I don't know what it is, but my close friend in the animation industry, he worked on Rugrats and stuff like that. He did it. You know what I'm
Saw a
saying?
picture of a dude when I typed in your name. Another dude popped up, and I was like, "That's not Saxon. Why does his name
Maybe
pop up? I mean, his face pop up on your
you
name?"
think we all the same. I don't know.
That's hilarious. But okay, so I don't get it mixed up. Run a list of stuff that you worked on that people watch.
Okay, I'm gonna go back to the beginning. I told you about the Cartoon Network stuff, right?
Yeah.
So the Cartoon Network bumpers. I worked on the first season of Aqua Teen Hunger Force, Harvey Birdman, Squidbillies. I worked on. I did a music video for Toni Braxton, which I'm proud of at first because before the Toni Braxton animation in that video, the only animation and live action was Paula Abdul. Right,
Oh, God,
and then
yeah.
when I did the Toni Braxton thing, and it was on Jay Leno, and it was like I wish I had an agent at that time, but it was everywhere. Music video awards and all that stuff. My animation was playing. So there was the Toni Braxton music video. I worked on Care Bear, Strawberry Shortcake, Madballs. What else? See, oh yeah, most recently was director and creative director on Sugar and Toys for Fuse TV. I worked on let's see what else. Zombie Walk music video for a designer. Did an animated music video for Tyga. What else? Yeah, I mean, what I'm most proud of is those history spots I did for Nickelodeon. Did like 27 of those.
Yeah, they were beautiful.
And that was a contract that lasted like 3 to 4 years. And so,
Yeah.
like, the most important thing to me, and I realized that by doing those history pieces, is that, when you teach history to children, like when you was a kid, you open up the history book, everything is in black and white. So you think it's all dated. And you just like just glaze over it and don't pay attention to it. But that was an opportunity to show kids historical figures in full color in the medium of the animation, right? In little short stories. And the kids remembered it because the formula was it showed that historical figure as a child, right? Showed how they got inspired, who they became, and then how that how what they've done inspired others later on. And so by doing those, right, kids would respond. They'd be like, yeah, I remember that. That's such a that. They remember who that figure was because of those spots, right? And I was like, man, that made my heart melt. And if I could have that type of effect on other young kids, whether they want to be an artist, an astronaut, whatever, through the medium of animation, then that's what I want to do. That's always been my main focus, is I want to create animated content. And I don't know if you notice this, but a lot of the content that I create have some historical value in it, but it's always entertainment first. So that when you watch it and then you find out something that's historical, and there's like, wait a second, is that real? Right? I like my work to be multi-layered. So I'm very proud of the history and heritage projects over at Nickelodeon Nick Jr.
Yeah, what I thought was great about that, like you said, it showed them as a child. Kids, when they're in school, they look, it's a disconnect
Yeah.
Because first of all, we're talking about adults. Like you said, it was old. I don't want to talk about this old stuff. But the connection came together because they could see that person as a child. Like, oh, okay, well, I didn't even think of him as a kid. So I can connect with that. And so they grew to be that. So I can grow to be that. But once you just show them as an adult, they were like, well, I'm tapped out. I
Right.
don't, they're an
Beyond
adult. Of course they can do it. Yeah. It was, it's funny when I saw that, I was like, I saw that. My baby was like glued to the screen. Every time one of those would come on between, I don't know, Yo Gabba Gabba or something she was watching,
Yep.
and then it'd pop on. Yeah. But we were talking about, how artists need to connect. What are some artists that you've worked with or have influenced your work?
What that influenced my work?
Yeah, that have influenced you as an artist, not your work per se, but influenced you as an artist.
Oh man, artists that influenced me is like Miyazaki, most definitely. We're talking about like senior artists, right? Because that's the only thing.
Yeah.
But like some young artists inspire me, but at the same time, my motto is always look to people that are the greatest at it, right? I need to look to the people that like that has done put years in working and they're masters. Like I
Yes.
try to look up to masters, and so like Miyazaki, Jim Henson, like Jim Henson, who else? There's like art wise. Oh man, I love Kehinde Wiley, like
Okay.
fine art, music, Outkast, Radiohead,
Oh
Tom
yeah.
Weaver. You know what I'm saying? These are artists. These are artists in their own right, but from different aspects outside of just animation, I get inspired. Filmmakers, Quentin Tarantino films, Alfred Hitchcock, Rod Sterling, because they're like thrillers. You know what I'm saying? Suspense. I'm inspired by Jordan Peele. There's some Jordan Peele's work. Yeah,
Yeah,
that.
I'm inspired. I don't know if you saw. I'm inspired. It sounds so cliche, but I don't care. I'm inspired by Beyonce. Did you watch that King
Oh
Is
my
Black?
God. I couldn't watch nothing else afterwards. I had to go to bed.
My
I was
skin
like, I
was
don't
like
even want to see nothing
electric.
else.
Yes. I was like this. I was telling my husband anything because I was thinking of the last project that she did. Lemonade, that whole Lemonade app. I'm like, everything that she and her creative team put together, you can freeze frame it and
Right.
make a portrait or a photo of it and hang it in your home. It's all, every inch of that film is art.
And blackness.
Yes.
Blackness. It's almost like when you see something like that, you forgot black people exist on the screen. You know what I'm saying? Like there's pinnacle moments of blackness when it's like for a minute it was like, oh yeah, we was black and powerful.
Yes.
Damn.
Or
That
different
is
things that
like
I learned in art history, like the Maasai tribe. She shows influences like the hair and the claws that the wear. And I'm just like, oh, and like the jumping that the Maasai tribe do. And that stuff pops up, and I'm like, I thought I only knew about that. Now it's on the TV. Like you feel a connection with it.
Man, and then I was like, this thing is so long. I was like, this thing was expensive as hell. I
Yeah, I didn't
was
feel
like,
like it was long. I didn't want it
this
to stop.
thing, right. You know, I loved it. I loved everything about it, like especially the blackness. You know what I'm saying? Because that's what's missing in a lot of the stuff that comes out is when you walk away from black content, if you walk away with a sense of pride, right? And like that's the goal. It's like if I can make something and have, you know, my people walk away with a sense of pride, then you did it, you know?
Yeah, and as a parent now, as I'm watching that Black is King, I'm watching my daughter at the same time, and her eyes, I'm like, is she gonna blink? Is she ever gonna blink? Like her eyes, are your eyeballs dry? And I can see her just sucking it in. And then when it's over, like even during it, she's like, the song ain't been out but 5 seconds. She already singing, the chorus to it. Then at the end, she get up and dancing, and she trying to, do some of the African-inspired dances. And then while we're watching it, I'm explaining to her, okay, they showed you the jungle and the Serengeti, but that's not all Africa, baby. That's what they tell us. I'm like, they are a thriving society. And so she showed the progression through the movie.
Right.
Like, and what really had me just rolling over in laughter is when Jay-Z rolled up to the mansion, right? And the servants out front was white.
The toothbrush.
Yes, and they're coming to America. Yes, so I'm just like ball, just rolling over, like the white butler carrying her train on her dress. I'm like, yeah, no, because we've always been portrayed as the housekeepers and the
Right.
servants in American storytelling. So I was just, trying to break it down for her. I was like, no, we can do great things. We can be great things, and we can still be ourselves. We don't have to sugarcoat it to
Right.
be this. Yeah.
But she's a queen.
Yes.
You're a queen.
Yes.
We're all descendants
Came
of
from the
God,
queen.
right?
Yes.
We're gods. We're made in his and her images. You know what I'm
Yeah,
saying?
somebody made it was a quote in there about that. Was
Yeah.
like, I am God. Why would I believe in God, the Father of all creation, and I think I'm a God? That's just crazy. You are
Well,
your parents.
no
Yeah.
matter what you do, why would you sell yourself short of doing any? And let's go back to, artists charging different rates, not charging enough. It's like you've done the work, right? You've done the work. You're trying to master that craft. And if somebody wants to sell you short, don't sell yourself short. You know what I'm saying? Don't lower your prices, because you're good at what you do, right? And so, like, we're strong, we're powerful, we're kings and queens, and we tend to forget that. And when we react to like videos like that Beyonce film, right, we almost forgot that until
Yes.
we see an example of it. You know what I'm saying? And we need to see way more examples of it.
Yes, and I'm just proud because she's been doing that. She's trying to feed us what we need. And I'm like, I love it. I love it. So, with her and then the Black Panther, I was like, can't nobody tell me shit.
Right. Now we all need to do the same.
Exactly.
We all need to do
So
the same.
we've been talking about the advancement of Black artists and all of this, just the whole gambit. But now I want to hit you with this. I call it superficial. It's a superficial debate.
Okay.
So in the age-old debate of what is considered anime, because from my page, I love anime, right? So we're always going back and forth in these little debates. What can be considered anime? So like the Boondocks, would you consider that anime? The reason
No.
I say I do, I knew he was gonna say no. The reason I say I do is because from when I was getting the DVDs, they have the extras in it and stuff. So from my understanding is that they were having a Japanese company produce the cartoon. And then it would air in the United States.
Japanese
So,
companies produce a lot of cartoons.
yeah, they do.
Most
So, and that's what I consider those anime because they are created by Japanese artists. But then in the flip of that, I was talking to my husband about it, and he was saying, well, what if some Japanese Americans created a cartoon? Would that be considered anime? I'm like, dude, I don't know. I gotta ask Saxon what he thinks.
Well, to answer your question, because I've posted things about this before. And so right now, as Black people, we don't have that much content out there, all right? And when it does come out, like with Boondocks, Black Dynamite, it was anime inspired, right? And it was definitely inspired by anime, but it still kept Aaron McGruder's style. He drew those characters that way anyway. You know what I'm saying? We just seen it in a broader scale, and so it was definitely anime inspired. But at the same time, it's its own thing. We had enough of that, right? If we right now, you say Boondocks, Black Dynamite. You put some more things together, it's its own thing, its own lane. It's different because in my mind, anime is literally animation that showcases their culture, right? It's a culture thing, right? Because like Hayao Miyazaki doesn't want his work called anime. He's Japanese. It's not anime. It's a different style, but it's Japanese culture. You see what I'm saying? And so when anime come, I love anime too. When the story's good, right? I can't take everything. But anime, it's their life, school life, right? A lot of stuff is martial arts. Right, it's giant robots, and they've established a whole realm within their culture, and that's why we love it so much. And I always, and not, I'm just going off to a little bit of a tangent, but you know how you go into it's like, oh, it's Taco Tuesday, let's go to a Mexican restaurant. As soon as you walk through that door, you're immersed in that culture, right?
Yes.
You're like, I'm not just, you can go into even Taco Bell, all that, but at a Mexican restaurant, you're immersed in the culture.
Yes.
They, you know, sometimes you'll go in there, they have a sombrero, or they have like, you're eating their food, and they want you to feel like you're in that world and within that culture. And the
Okay.
same with the animation that we consume. We love Japanese animation because we want to be immersed in that culture. Oh, they wear school outfits when they go to school. What's that like? Right? You know, it's like they got giant robots and the samurais and all that other stuff and their weapons, and that's their culture. Now, if we did the same thing, spinning off of Boondocks and Black Dynamite and what have you with black animation, we're immersing people within that culture. So I love those shows so much. Like Black Dynamite takes you back to the 70s, but a lot of the stuff that happens in there is still relatable to today. And the Boondocks tackle, you know, modern day subjects, right? From a black perspective, right? It's a cultural thing to me. So anime is just Japanese culture. And a lot of times they try to mix the two together. Like I know Netflix is doing a lot of that. But then, and it's great to see that type of collaboration, but we still have a lot of work to do. I want to see more Jorge Gutierrez's. You know what I'm saying? I want to see more Maya. I want to see Maya in the three. I want to see you know, I want to see more Latin and Mexican stories. You know what I'm saying? I want them to have their own realm of animated storytelling. I want to see, you know, the same way Japanese did. I want us to be able to have that. We should have a wide spectrum of different storytelling. I know I'm on my way to answer your question, but
No, that was, you know what, and that's, I'm glad you expressed it that way, because in my head, anime, I guess it began and it started and ended at, was it produced by the Japanese? That's it. I was like, so when Netflix will say they have an original anime, I'm like, but was it created by Japanese people? Then it's an American, it's a Western cartoon at this point. So why would you put anime on it? It's not. Or is it the style? Is the style?
I think what it has to boil down to is the storyteller,
Okay.
right? The director, the
Yep.
writer and director and the creator of that story, who works on it. Really, I know there's some Japanese, most Japanese and Korean studios work on the majority of the animation that we have coming out, but that doesn't make it that. It's the creator and the storytellers that created it. You know what I'm saying? And the perspective and the lens that they're expressing that story through. You know what I'm
And
saying?
you're a wild card in there. So what about the brother with the animation company in Japan? Would that still be considered anime?
I mean, it depends on the type of stories that he's trying to tell. I don't think they have, I don't know, but you know, do they have original stuff that they created that's their own yet? Like I'm a big fan of D'Art Shitajia.
Yeah, I can never pronounce it.
I met with that brother, one of the brothers, because there's two brothers, and they're twins too. I met with
That's what I
that
think is
brother.
one brother. Okay,
Yeah, I met with that brother. Really cool dude. I love what he's doing out there. He's a pioneer. You know what I'm
Yeah.
saying? They do phenomenal work. You know what I'm saying? And I look forward to seeing what they come with from that's original of their own. You know what I'm saying? So we're like we're on the pinnacle of all this stuff. Like we need to make more content. And there's a lot of people now that's creating that opportunity, and they're one of them. You know, there's also Noir Caesar is doing a lot of books, but like it's different though too, because like you got a lot of young brothers and sisters that love anime and they want to do anime, right? But if you want to tell a black story and you just want to, you can be anime inspired.
Yes.
Okay. But it all boils down to the creator, the storyteller, and the people that are originating that story, right? Not
Yeah.
necessarily the people that work on it.
Yeah. So, and I always say, and I've said it a couple of times on this show, I feel like black people in general gravitate to anime because it's something that we can connect to. It's not our story, but they're very, like you said, culture, it's in depth in their culture. So we don't really per se have a culture that we know about,
We
our own
stole
history. Say that again.
it was hidden from us.
Yes,
We didn't
exactly.
have to remember until Beyonce just discovered it last night.
Yeah, so when we
When
see something
people
like that,
want animated stuff that looks like that, then
yeah.
what?
Yeah, but it's just that, okay, so we talk about Dragon Ball Z a lot. It's really not even so that the characters, we look nothing like the characters. It's the story that we can connect to. So what I always go back to is like Goku. Everybody loves Goku. Happy go lucky dude, but Goku was a trash ass dad. A lot of black people can say, oh yeah, my daddy was cool, but he was a trash ass. I'm like, he wasn't trying to do his responsibilities. He was trying to do what he was trying to do, no matter the consequence to his family. That's Goku. And then we talk about Piccolo. Piccolo was like that dude in the hood that looked after the kids. You know, ah, your trash ass daddy ain't around, so I'm gonna show this little dude what he needs to do to be better. So it's just the stories of anime that we connect to so strongly because we like that culture. We're hungry for culture, basically. And anime is heavy. Yeah.
Our culture was stripped from us,
Yeah.
so we're hungry for it. That's why when Black Panther and Beyonce drop something new, we're reminded, right? And the fact that Japanese anime and manga and they've locked in their culture,
Yeah.
right? The Japanese love that. It's part of their day to day. They're
Yeah.
immersed in that. Manga is just laying around. You know what I'm
Yeah.
saying? It's
Adults
around.
reading it on a train. Yeah.
We need to do that for ourselves. You know what I'm
Yeah.
saying? We need to be immersed in our culture and reminded of our culture daily.
Yeah, because like the closest thing I can think of to something that we do culturally on a day-to-day basis, well, not right now, but it's like, you know, when somebody give you dab, you know, that's something that we did culturally. Like in
The
anime, they do things like they bow to each other. And
Right.
I had to look up that. I was like, what is that all about? And so you, like you said, you see something and you research it. Like, what does that mean? Or, you know, they take their shoes off, or, you know, they do their whatever. They pray when they, before they eat. We pray before we eat. I'm just saying, you see those things, you want to learn more. So when you see it with your own culture, you're like, I'm hungry. I want it all. Yeah.
We need to start doing more. I want to see more of that in books. I want to see more of that in animation, you know? So just a consistent reminder
Yeah, man. And I think it would be
who we are.
beautiful if you could see anything from, like you said, the story of the stories that Beyonce tells and what we saw, the beauty of the culture in Black Panther. We could make whole universes that would be magnificent if we just, you know, put them out there. It could be anything at this point. Say it again.
There are some things out there, but we got to support them and the artists that create them.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
But that was deep. I get sweaty when I get passionate. My husband's like, why will you get out your interviews? You're all sweaty. I'm like, because I'm talking to people that's passionate about stuff that I'm passionate about. But we're gonna remove the stress and the sweats for a second and get silly. So I do this thing, do you want to get with this or do you want to get with that? So you just tell me which you prefer. If you want to elaborate, that's cool. Sometimes I give people stank eye for the answers. So we'll see if we run into that. Which you prefer, Netflix or Hulu?
Right now, toss up.
Yeah.
Well, since I'm working with, it's like they stuck. Because Netflix paying me right now, I'm gonna go with Netflix.
Okay. And at this point, this is what I give folks the stank eye because for a minute, Netflix was just grabbing all the content, good or bad, and just putting it out. I'm like, please stop. You don't gotta have all the content. Just have some good content. That's all I want.
I have one recommendation on Hulu. Pen 15.
What is that? I haven't heard that.
Pen 15, hands down. It's a comedy.
I gotta go away.
I ain't even gonna go into detail. Season
Okay.
two comes out either this month or next month, but watch season one of Pen 15. I won't steer you wrong.
Okay, Pen 15. I'm gonna write that down. Okay, console gaming or PC gaming? I don't know if you're a gamer, but
Console.
console. Bam. Because that shit, hitting keys and joysticks, and that's too much for me. I'm getting older. I just want the controller. Okay, Wacom pad or a Procreate on iPad?
Could dive deep into that because right now I'm working off an iPad,
Yeah, me
right?
too.
And I have a Wacom tablet as well, not a Cintiq. But it's hard because like I've gone back to paper. But right now I've been using Procreate And then sometimes I'll bring it in because there's an issue with Procreate that I can't stand. And no
What's
one
that?
can tell me the way out of this.
What is it?
So people will do high resolution, beautiful, detailed artwork. But you're not able, if you scale it up or shrink it down or move it, the resolution drops.
I've found that too.
And so most people that do the high detailed work will say, oh, no, I don't scale anything. I just zoom in, zoom out, and that's it. Like, I don't move it. I was like, man, I need to move my stuff for like professional client work or whatever. I need those layers. You have a limited amount of layers.
Yes.
So what I do now, this is a tip, and I'm sorry to go off on a tangent, but I'll draw assets for my whole piece in Procreate at a large size, and I'll export it into Photoshop.
Oh, okay. Because I was
Because
trying to finagle my way around it. I was like, okay, so I'm gonna start with a large dimension. So say I do something 18 by 18. And then I'm like, okay, so now I can bring up the resolution, but now I won't be able to, I'll have like 11 or 12 layers at that point. And when I get what I want, then I'll start merging the layers down
I can't
that aren't
be doing
important.
that. If you do professional work, your client sometimes wants to make adjustments, and you can't just be flattening stuff like that. So I'll do my whole layout because with the iPad you can do it in your lap and go outside, whatever. And so I lay it out, and then when I do like the final piece, I'll do it in chunks, like certain areas, and then I'll export it into Photoshop, and then I'll piece it all together. So I don't resolution. I just like the convenience of being able to go anywhere with my iPad, you know, so.
That's the thing, you got to come up with all these different side plans, because that's what I say, I'll condense it, but before I condense layers, I'll make a duplicate file and then
Right.
go back to my
I do that
original.
too. That's the struggle in Procreate. You know what I'm
They got to
saying?
do something
So
like that.
I'm about to get the new iPad, so I won't have to have that much of a problem because the new iPad is supposed to be super powerful.
Well, let me know the price point of that. You know, I ain't living like you living. Okay. When you're driving or on the train, do you prefer music or podcasts?
Music.
Okay. What you listening to right now?
Oh man, I've been listening to I just bought Beyonce album. The thing didn't even end yet. I was like, let me buy this real quick. So I gotta listen to that. I've been listening to Earth Gang. Have you heard Earth Gang? If you loved Outkast, the next evolution of Outkast is Earth Gang. They rock with J. Cole, Dreamville. They're on Dreamville. So like I've been listening to Earth Gang. I've been listening to movie soundtracks. So like I listen to a lot of that. And yeah, I think that's about it.
I listen more podcasts right now, but my always go to, and I don't know why I'm stuck in like 2006 or something, but I keep listening to Mos Def's what is it? November, December. It's just an instrumental. And I used to bump it on the train in Atlanta, like as high as I could get it. And people would give me the stank eye on the train. I was a backpack kid. And so they was like, he turn that shit down. Like, no, Mos Def, my nigga.
I give you a weird tip as an artist, right? If you ever did like a really dope piece that you're really proud of, and you examine it, because like when I listen to music, my hand seems to tends to flow. My line work is confident. I'm just flowing with the music to that beat. If you ever want to ever recreate that moment, listen to that old track again when you work. It's almost like repetition.
Like
It could be
muscle
old.
memory.
Yeah, it could be old, right? But if it really inspired you and you was on that wave for a moment and you were making that really dope piece and you were listening to that, listen to it again next time you need to, you know what I'm saying?
That's crazy, because I used to paint listening to that song. It wasn't just on a train, but when I would be in art class, you know, the studio was empty. I'd paint and I would just listen to that on rotation. You tapped on something. See, I'm finna get this
Put it
graphic
in.
novel done. Okay, so would you prefer a big party or a small gathering when outside officially opens?
Small gathering. I keep my
Damn.
circle close.
Would you want to do camping or binge watching your favorite shows at home?
Depends on who I'm camping with.
Yeah, that's true. You might end up burying some goddamn body. Would you prefer, what do you prefer, Studio Ghibli over Disney animation? or vice versa?
I love, well, if we're talking about classic Disney, I really love all the classic Disney. They're both magic,
Yeah.
right? And they kind of both inspired, well, Miyazaki was inspired off the old Disney works. Man, I have to pick between the two.
You gotta pick one, gotta go. You have to go to therapy after this.
Don't want to go.
We gotta go.
Oh my God. I guess right now I have to go with Miyazaki.
Yeah, because I was watching Spirited Away the other day. That was actually one that put me on to him, and I just, watched all. I was in college when I saw Spirited Away, and I was like, this is fucking beautiful.
Right.
Who does this unless they're insane to put so much intricate detail into the thing?
I watched The Wind Rises yesterday.
I love everything. Princess Mononoke, or I can't remember how to pronounce it, but yeah. The fucking scenes with her riding the wolf and just the movement of the whole thing.
Right.
I just can't understand how somebody doesn't go
Magic.
insane after creating something like that.
Magic. It's magic.
Magic.
And if to all the animator fans out there, if you know who the nine old men are from Disney, no, they're not. Oh my gosh. You don't know who the nine old men are?
No.
The nine old men were the like key animators over at Disney that made all the movies that people grown to love and know, and all the important moments, like Jungle Book was the last one they really worked on, but like Bambi, Snow White, all the other stuff. But the nine old men are the people, the guys that really took animation to the next level, to where you'll see an animated character and you'll feel emotion. They mastered emotion in animation. There's one film I recommend to any animator, watch Frank and Ollie.
I've heard that before, but I've never watched that before. Yeah.
Those, they're two of the nine old men. They're the ones that captured the most heartwarming scenes and most of the original Disney animated features. And so watch Frank and Ollie.
Okay. Because I
Watch that.
did watch something where they would break down the process of their animation. So, they would record the actors, running and falling out and stuff like that, and then recreate that. And that's why it had such a human feel. Because, you see some cartoons, they're just robotic. And I'm like, no, they went for the whole spectrum of movement back then.
You know what? Back then, when they were animating on paper, right? Because right now you can do it on the computer and see it right away. When they animated all that stuff on paper, a lot of times they were all on the same sheet. So they were masters. And so when they shot, when you animate on paper, you have a camera and you have to shoot it all, right? And so the timing has to be right. They couldn't see what it looked like for like a week or two later. They had to send it away and then it come back. And there's a, okay, well, I need to fix this. And they ain't got that time. So they had to master it and get it right the first fucking time. So those are the ultimate masters. Were the ultimate masters in animation. You know what I'm saying? Watch Frank and Ollie, and you'll get it.
See, you speak on that paper. When I was going to the Atlanta College of Art, we had to do that. And I was like, oh no, the animation game is for me. I need to be a character designer. And it was like, they're going away from that, really. I was like, I don't even want to have to do it one day. I don't want to do this. I'm going to design the characters.
The principles are still the same.
Yeah. So I'm
Principles are
like,
still
no,
the
I'm
same.
good. Let's see here. American cartoons or Japanese anime? Western American cartoons that
Well,
have not been produced, because I know you're a dig deep. Had they been produced by the Japanese? No. American artists making American cartoons and Japanese making Japanese anime.
I have to go with American cartoons. There's a
Word. Because that's
there's
your
more versatility in style.
Okay, yeah,
You know what
that's
I'm
true.
saying? The versatility in style. You got like SpongeBob, you got Looney Tunes, you got Amazing World of Gumball, you got like it's so versatile. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Then you got Boondocks, and then you got like, you know what I'm saying? It's very versatile in
See,
style.
I dare you come on my show and make me think, because you're right. I'm like, no, anime all day. And then I'm like, I do like Gumball. I do like regular show. You're
Adaptation.
Let's see. Would you prefer a comic book or a comic book movie?
It's different now since Marvel started making all those movies. They raised
Yeah.
the
Nah.
bar. Right now it's comic book movies. I've been reading comic books, but they do have limitations. But you got to have the book before. It's like the chicken that who came first, the chicken or the egg. The stories came first in the books.
Yeah, I just
But
get a
I do
little
like
disappointed.
right now I like the movie. Yeah. The
Yeah,
bet to me, the best transition from comic to film was Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Yes, oh my God. I thought that was just like the best shit ever. Because I'm like, the comic book, it's got a great story, but it's so simplistic. The style is simplistic. And then to see it on the big screen, I'm like, oh, they pulled out all the bells and whistles on this damn. This it was it.
Well done.
let's see. Would you prefer a rich friend or a loyal friend?
Loyalty.
Exactly. You know what? I got good people on this show. Now, one person has picked a rich friend because they could possibly be trash. Would you prefer a horror movie or a Japanese horror movie?
Ooh. I like Japanese horror movies.
Hell yeah, because they don't give a damn about your psyche when
Right.
you're done with. Like they we're gonna show you the most gruesome shit ever. You're never gonna forget it. You're gonna be sleeping with the lights on for about a week.
Yeah.
What was the last Japanese horror movie you watched?
I can't. I try to watch a couple of new ones, but I think, I don't know if it's considered a Japanese horror movie, but I do have a recommendation
Okay.
called I Saw the Devil.
Oh, damn, I'm already messed up off the title.
No, it's amazing. It's about,
Oh,
I
my.
love that movie. I
Okay.
Saw the Devil.
Is that on Netflix?
It was. I don't know if it still is. But it's definitely a must see. It could it's borderline horror, I guess, but it fits within that realm. But yeah, I
Okay,
saw
cool.
it.
All right, man. That's all, because I can talk all day to you about art and cartoons, and because we didn't say nothing about She-Ra and He-Man. That was my shit. That's what put me on. I was
Yeah.
like, oh, if I can draw this and Jim and the Holograms, and my mother has all my sketchbooks of me just reproducing. Huh?
New He-Man coming.
I get disappointed when they bring old stuff back, like the Thundercats. Like, just don't do it if you're not gonna do it right.
Yeah, you still have the classics, you know?
Yeah.
Like I was on the fence of the new Thundercats, but at the same time, it's almost making fun of the Thundercats. And I love the animation. I love
Ah.
the silliness to it because the original still exists.
It does. But then I look back, I'm like, look how beautiful. You know what? It's aesthetics for me. Huh?
If that was beautiful and that's what struck a chord with you, look at that.
Yeah, you're right. I just hate these babies get the half ass. I call it the half ass anime. Oh, you got that little Thundercat half ass. Go ahead with yourself then. All right. If you could tell the listeners where they can find you.
You can find me on Instagram. Everything is just at Saxton Moore. You can find me on Instagram. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Facebook, but I'm migrating off of Facebook. I'm doing a lot of migrating, but I think right now you can mostly find me on Instagram. You can see my work on Behance. I recommend any artist starting their portfolio use Behance. I have Saxton Moore Productions is on YouTube as well, so follow me on there.
All right, Saxton. Well, it was great talking to you. I hope it's not the last time. And any future projects you're working on, you want to come on and talk about, please let me know so I
They're
can shout
coming.
that out.
They're coming. They're in the works. I'm grinding. They're
Yeah,
coming.
man, it's you been grinding. That's all you
I got some new stuff coming soon.
do. All right. Well, you take it easy out here in these Corona streets.
Thank you. Thank you. I greatly appreciate you bringing me on and interviewing me. And I had a lot of fun. And hopefully, we can do it again soon.
Oh, yeah, man. You were a lot of fun. All right, y'all. That was our show. I hope you enjoyed yourself as always. Hope you learned something as always. I know that I did. And me personally talking to another artist that has walked that walk and dreamed that dream and are aspiring and constantly creating within that dream of being a creator is very inspiring to me. So afterwards, we had a great conversation. It is always nice to talk to Saxton. I can't believe it took this long since we had been Insta buddies in the DMs for so damn long. But I was so happy that we had a great conversation. You all could be a part of that. If you have any questions, just reach out to him. He was, you know, kind of open to me. I don't know if he'd be open to y'all, but give it a try. So I hope you took your notes. If you missed something, please go back. Share this with any up-and-coming artists, especially young people that you know. I think it'll be very eye-opening and it'll spark something in them. So like I said, this is the end of our show. I want to do my roundabouts. If you want to support the show, you can go to Cash App. The Cash App is $GadgetsAndGeekery. Or you can also support the show by giving a donation or a tip through Anchor. You can also go over to the GadgetsAndGeekery.com. We've got merch over there, t-shirts, hats, cell phone cases, and I'm thinking I'm adding some new stuff pretty soon. But I got a lot of stuff going on right now, so I need to, you know, try to keep it together because I can get spread thin real quick. If you have any questions or comments or suggestions or just want to tell me if you like the show, if you don't, I mean, because I'm working on my thick skin, so I think I can take it. Just call a sister. The hotline number is 972-664-4886. Eventually, I'll be putting together a giveaway for people that actually call, because you know what, y'all, I pay for this phone number and y'all is not calling me, okay? I don't like to be paying for something that ain't getting utilized, so let me try to put together a giveaway, get them calls coming in. You can follow me on social media. Instagram is where I live, or you can find me on Facebook or Twitter, Gadgets and Geekery. We also have a 21 and up Discord. If you'd like to be a part of that, please DM me. Eventually, that will be a part of the Patreon when I put that on a long list of things that I need to do. And if you are a hip-hop artist, lyricist, singer, we have a showcase called Nerdcore Spotlight that we're bringing back that we did in season one. So send me an email, send me a song that you'd like to have aired, and the public would really love to hear that. Anything that's dealing with nerd culture. And again, this is your girl Q. Hope you enjoyed the show, and I'll see y'all next time.